I love bringing on a variety of perspectives and people from the retail space onto this podcast. Buyers, sales reps, you name it, they've been on the Proof to Product podcast. So on this week's episode, I'm joined by Kelly Fa, who is the owner of Crow & Canary. Crow & Canary might sound familiar as we've had the previous owner, Karina Murray, on the show. It was episode 232 if you want to go back and listen to that one. Karina has also been a longtime Paper Camp speaker and supporter of our Proof to Product community. Kelly took over Crow & Canary in early 2023 after being a sales rep for the agency as well as a shop owner in Seattle. With over 13 years experience as a retailer and a background in communications and PR, including stints at Microsoft and Nordstrom, Kelly brings a wealth of knowledge to our conversation. In this episode, Kelly shares challenges that retailers are facing, from managing seasonal returns to making strategic buying decisions. We discuss the impacts of online platforms like Fair and Amazon on the wholesale markets, and why there needs to be transparency and strong communication between buyers, reps, and brands. Kelly also shares her insights on navigating the sales rep relationship amidst the changes brought on by the pandemic and social media, and the importance of understanding individual store dynamics and product diversification. Whether you are a retailer, a sales rep, or a brand owner, this episode offers valuable takeaways on optimizing those wholesale relationships and staying proactive in your business planning. Today's episode is brought to you by our Unlock Buyer Secrets interview series. To make a strong first impression with wholesale buyers, we need to do a few things really well. We need to make it easy for stores to purchase from us. We need to have clear pricing and terms and conditions. We need to focus on building strong relationships with our customers. And all of those become infinitely easier when we actively listen to our customers. This on-demand interview series will give you a competitive edge by providing an exclusive window into what buyers want and need from you. And the best part, it's only $27. So get access at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. That's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Kelly, welcome to Proof to Product.
Thank you. I'm so happy it worked out finally for me to be here. I'm really appreciative.
Of course. No, we're happy to have you tell your story. You have a wide range of experience in this industry. I would love for you to tell our listeners about who you are and what you do.
It's been a path. I think the most recent, of course, I am a sales rep in stationery. I now own Crow & Canary, which was founded by the amazing Karina Murray. And so I officially took that over at the beginning of 2023 and had become a rep the year prior. But it's interesting. I think a lot of times sales representation is very abstract for people. And I was fortunate enough that, well, depends on how you look at fortunate, but my husband had been an independent rep 20 plus years ago. And then working with reps, I was a retailer for, I think, about 13 years in Seattle. I focused primarily in textiles. We were a sewing, knitting, craft destination, much more modern, not kind of the antithesis to Joann's. And one of the biggest subcategories I had was stationery. My first love has always been cards. And so I was fortunate enough to have this really amazing card rep over the years. Her name's Tamara Gellert. And in March of 2021, she reached out about retiring. And it was a little crazy because I still had my store. And I think like most retailers in any business that was existing during the pandemic, I don't think the pandemic caused a lot of things, but I think it was a catalyst for things that may have been on the horizon to happen. And so I took on the role and subsequently closed my store in 2022. But I think what I love is that I get to still kind of hold the retail baby, but I get to give it back. And I've just been so impressed because whether or not it was my neighborhood or whatnot, but it's still, I mean, actually most all the stores and restaurants that were in my street commercial core are no longer there in that part of Seattle. Yeah. It's very sad. I think eventually when the office people are back in true levels, we'll see things shift because it's the most beautiful part of Seattle. It's the most historic, but it also has its other challenges. But yeah, so I think I have just been so impressed wherewithal of the retailers I work with now. And a lot of them had, they actually had better business during the pandemic, right? Because people who were adjacent to neighborhoods, they shopped more locally. And now as a rep, what we're I see more is that I think a lot of businesses are still doing well, but it's not this robust small business support. People are traveling more now and the tourists aren't necessarily like coming into the stores. So I think hopefully in the next year or so, and we're also in an election year, so there's some challenges there. But yeah, so I owned, it was called Dry Goods Design since like 2009, but 2011 is when I officially started. I started online only and then kind of had this organic growth cycle and then ended up in 3,400 square feet in downtown Seattle. Wow. And taught thousands of people how to sew. And we were the card hub of the neighborhood, which was really fun. And then prior to that, I worked for Microsoft. I worked for Nordstrom. And before I went into corporate Nordstrom, I actually, you know, worked on the sales floor. And it's funny, I remember being like, I'm never going to work in retail again. And then I just kept going back to it. And I think the really, whenever I would hire somebody, I would talk about what they felt about people. Like, oh, I love people. I'm like, but do you? Because you kind of have to love the worst and the best of people. And being a sales rep is really no different. I mean, 99.9% of our accounts are incredible people. And not to say that the 0.01% isn't or 0.1% isn't, but you know, people treat people differently in sales. And so my goal as a sales rep is always, how can I make your job easier? And when we now the sales rep world looks very different, right? We've got these disruptors, we've got additional channels. And I think there was a portion of time for a lot of reps, late 90s, the 90s, part of the 2000s, where it was really easy to make money.
Yeah.
Just by, because you were the gatekeeper, right? And now, and not that you weren't hustling back then, but now you really do have to hustle. And it's interesting because I'll talk to accounts and they'll tell me stories about reps of what they've done. And it is mortifying, but there's also really incredible reps that want to be supporter and champion of their accounts. So I think that's kind of where being a rep has kind of merged the corporate life I've had in the past. And then I think also retailers in the way we talk about small business, but really they have to operate in a corporate-like way to succeed. You have to have process, you have to have structure, but hopefully you have flexibility to do what you need to for your staff and your customers. So yeah, so my background has been, and when I was in corporate, it was communications and I did PR. And so it's funny, we were talking before we started, but it's the PR and communications aspect of being a business owner. Like I love talking about other people, don't like talking about myself. And that's why, like with my business, Dry Goods, I think I loved it if somebody didn't know I was the owner. The pandemic changed that because it was just me. But I wanted people to be attached to the feeling and the community that they had there and nothing to do with me. And that's just because I think community, and it's hard now as a rep to have that same part because it is a very autonomous role. And with our Crone Canary team, it's, you know, I really don't want to be a micromanager, but at the same time, I'm like, how do we connect with each other and not feel so isolated? Because we're often the people we're connecting with are our accounts, which is amazing, but those are your customers. So how do you have these peer-to-peer community building aspects? So yeah, it's been a kind of wild ride and I don't know necessarily what's ahead as the landscape changes, but right now it's a lot of work because I, in addition to just managing my territories, which are Washington, Oregon, and Vancouver, BC, and Vancouver, BC has kind of shifted a lot too, just with tariffs and the pandemic, and then overseeing the team and trade shows and kind of trying to do more. And I will say since Dry Goods was very well known on the social media and I mean, Instagram was a huge revenue driver for me, that it's been slow road. I'm slowly starting to kind of exercise that muscle with Crow and Canary. But I think for anyone who's in business, like, social media is great, and it's also very taxing. It's really hard. And so having a year or so where I didn't have to touch it was really incredible. But then I realized, oh, I have no idea if I'm not on there, like, what's going with the accounts, what's going on with the lines. And so it's a double-edged sword for sure. And so I've been slowly kind of mapping out like how the new era of Crow and Canary wants to present itself and share news. And then also, I'd love to be more of a resource for our stores to see, like, assortment planning and kind of putting together their buys.
Yeah.
That isn't just, you know, when we're in those meetings.
You bring up a really good point with social media. I mean, we talk about the grind of feeding the social media beast, right? Like, all of us as business owners feel that pressure to be online, showcasing our own work and talking about what we're doing to really draw on the buyers. But you're also using that as a tool to not only connect with the stores you're selling to, but also connect with the accounts that you're representing. And so in some ways, it's like a news feed for you to see what's new and exciting, what's happening in their worlds.
Yes. And I think the biggest part of what maybe is my roadblock is, it's definitely not how we can, like, communicate to our customers. I think it's more looking at the stakeholders, the lines, and how do we equitably represent them in social media and, like, not have it. And, you know, some people have been like, well, if people aren't putting out new things, then, and I was like, that's fair. However, it's like, how, yeah. So it can, yeah. A news feed is a great opportunity. And I think the thing is, you know, so my previous business, I was a store. We had over 20,000 followers when I closed, and it's hilarious. I still have the account open, and now it's just like, it's, I don't know if there were a bunch of bots or whatever, but it's down to like 16,000. And so that was wonderful, right? But then I'm like, it's quality over quantity. And
yeah, for sure.
For us, you know, I don't think our accounts, maybe it would cause them to want to be like, oh my gosh, I need to order that. But it's also how we can help our lines grow and reach other people. So yeah, I think that's what I think has been hard. It's, you know, I think one is very natural for me to just be like, oh, how can we help somebody else? But then it's like, oh, wait, representation, is it going to be fair when we have almost 20 lines?
Yeah, I can understand that too, because as somebody that works with thousands of brands, I used to do a lot of sharing their products on my feed to amplify them and stuff. Now I feel like it's more tricky with people not wanting everyone sharing their stuff with, I mean, even if you credit others, some people don't want that. And so I want to be very respectful of what people want and need from that. So I'm doing more of sharing things in stories, but I know what you mean about the equity of it all. Like, I wish I could see everything that everyone in our community is doing so that I could amplify to my audience the amazing things that they're working on. So I understand the nuance to that.
And yeah.
It gets tricky for sure.
And I think this is one of, if I were to give advice around social media, my thing with my store was, I truly believed, because I mean, I was on their Instagram start in 2011, 2012.
Yeah, 11.
When Amaro, remember all the filters, like it was deep Amaro. My whole thing was like, sales should never be the purpose of any post. It should be a byproduct. And I think that's what happened during the pandemic. Because we were engaging with our customers in the same way, and the world, I mean, it's still on fire. You're like, you know what? I'm just going to post pretty things that we have in the store. And so then I think it really did shift. And then it's kind of hard to work out of that.
Yeah.
Because of course we're on there, we're businesses, but you're building a community. And so that's the other thing. I think that's why I fully believe you watch social medias that like have a story and like those presence. And so I think, yeah, it's like, that's where if I think I agree, like the stories is great that way. You can have that be kind of this like focal point of sharing product. But yeah, and I think you were kind of alluding to it. But yeah, you have a lot of copycats out there. And so it's tough, I think, especially when people have put their heart and soul into something and then they're just like, why do I have to protect it so hard? But I also need to get it out there. So yeah.
It's a push-pull for sure. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's one of those things like where I always hope that like, it's not direct selling, but it's more a byproduct of it.
Yeah. I would love to hear, as you've already referenced, the industry has shifted so much over the last several years. The way buyers are purchasing has shifted. The way sales reps are selling, the way sales reps are working with brands has shifted. What are you seeing in your local market? And I know you can't speak for every sales rep out there, but I'm just curious what your experiences are. What are you seeing in terms of sales trends or even feedback from buyers in your territory? How are they viewing the marketplace right now?
If we're looking just in the, you know, the last quarter and a half, I think 2024 has definitely been softer than it was last year. It was a little soft last year. I think people coming out of the pandemic and their, whether or not there was snowstorms during Valentine's Day. And it's funny, I will section off the love cards in my decks for like 7 months out of the year. People are like, we're good, because they usually, you know, try and offset having specific Valentine's days. But yeah, I think people may have overbought for a couple seasons. But then what has happened more this year, I mean, you have certain markets, you know, we have a dozen states.
Yeah.
And there's certain territories that are just like, you know, the reps like, oh, I'm done with all my holiday meetings in July. And the rest of us are going, huh? Like how? I mean, I have people that are still in October buying for holiday. And that's probably more cash flow, right? Or just, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around that. We had a lot of last minute Mother's Day. And then I had accounts, right, that like for years have been like, oh, this is the best April I've ever had. This is the best. And this year they're like, oh, it wasn't the best. And so I think what I've heard more is that it's not great, but it's not horrible. But I think also too, it's an election year. And I was talking to somebody and like, oh, election years are great. And I've never heard anyone ever say,
I don't know anyone say that.
They were just like trying to convince themselves of it. But yeah, I think I just see, and I think, you know, my accounts have definitely mentioned it too. I think the world is just much more macroeconomics. And I think the pandemic really just brought to light that, oh my, when people aren't out and about, they do learn more. And the inflation, the political landscape, what's happening outside of our borders, and with social media, right? Like there's just access to so much information. You can't really put your blinders on as much. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely not awesome out there. But I think also too, I've, you know, checked in with quite a few accounts, and I have like a kind of boutique grocery store that, you know, they're allowed to return their seasonal items. And almost, I think there's one out of 10 stores that actually has Mother's Day returns, but people had a bunch of Easter returns because Easter was this really weird early weekend in March and none of the buyers were ready for it. I'm really trying to push Valentine's buying with holiday buying so that first 2 weeks of January aren't horrible for everyone trying to get meetings. And then regard to trends, I think each territory is really different. I'm fortunate enough that I think the rep before me really kind of didn't fall prey as much to FAIR and when FAIR came on. And I do think there's a ton of buyers that are now like, it's not good for me. And I think one of the things is that here's the thing, like it is easy, right? You can do it with a glass of wine at 11 o'clock. And I used to joke as a retailer, I made most of my decisions between 11 and 1 a.m. Like that's just how it went. But I still met with all my reps, and because in the end, it's a human. And it's funny, you know, FAIR orders go wrong and who do people call or email? And so anyway, but yeah, there's, and you know, you'll talk to reps and they'll say all these things and it's a disruptor. I think it definitely hurts. It's, you know, it's kind of like as a rep, you're like, you've automatically rejected my services. But at the same time, it's also an opportunity for us to kind of show and demonstrate value. And I get it, like there's a lot of benefits, but I think as FAIR is starting to have to be more profitable, the pinch is happening in different things.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm saying FAIR a lot because it is the Amazon of wholesale. And also it's done a really good job of kind of narrowing its competitors too. Like there were a bunch of platforms and now there's very few. What I find fascinating is many lines are rebooting their own wholesale portals.
Yep. I'm seeing it too.
Yeah. So I think that's good. Right. I think the big thing for us is some lines are not transparent. about who's ordering and when. And I'll walk into a store and literally like the line is in the door, the store next door. And so the whole exclusivity, all that stuff, there's a lot that is a misnomer, I think. But you do have this new world of buyer or new version of buyers that I get it. It's like, oh, I can try this, I can try that. And then when you walk into some of those stores, it does feel like, oh, you tried a bunch of stuff, but what's the story? And so as a retailer, I think it was December 2020, because I'd been getting emails for years. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to Hail Mary it. Like, let's get a bunch of stuff. And that was the only time I ordered. Like, I just unfair. Never. Mm-hmm, yeah. And I had $100,000 in terms. I'm like, this isn't responsible. And so I just found, like, I personally would rather work directly with the brand or the rep, or also just be truly sure not everyone has it.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, it was really sweet. I've met with a few new buyers and they're like, well, why you? And I go, well, like, there's going to be business benefits over here. I do find that you may buy more when you meet with me, but you buy the right cards or the right assortment, not just what says is high sell through. And then also, like, I'm going to like check in with you, see what's happening. I'll let you know. I'll be really honest. Like, that card is a card that people will take a photo of. They will not buy. Because I saw that in my own store. Like, the really clever cards sometimes just are amazing, but nobody's going to buy it because there's really no reason to give it. So yeah, so I think it's like us trying to communicate our value. And also, it's a pendulum. You know, I think I'm seeing more and more buyers shift. And then we're going to probably see another round of buyers be like, well, this, I'm so entrenched in this purchasing behavior, right, that it doesn't make sense for me to move off of it. And hopefully, and that's the thing, like, I also know there was quite a few reps that are like, oh, okay, I'll send you my link. And then they never talk to the store again. And that to me is a disservice as well. Like, I don't think we should be getting credit if we're not checking in with those stores. I do ask our lines now, like, if you get a, like, and we have some lines that are literally so fantastic. They will email us when a store has purchased on Fair. Is this okay? And there's been instances where I'm like, hey, let me go to this other account, because instead of this $120 order you're about to get, they will spend four digits a year.
Yeah.
And they'll do right by your brand versus just trying it out. And then you kind of shut other doors down. And, you know, the lines are busy too. So it's not like I'm expecting, because sometimes they're like, we've reached out and we've never heard back. And I was like, fair enough. So I think there needs to be kind of a recalibration of working together, because nobody wants their product in every single door.
Yeah.
And no retailer, I think truly, once especially they've been around for a while, they don't want the same thing as other people either. Yeah. And so it's tough, because I think you've got bigger cities that have multiple commercial cores, and then you have these tiny towns that are literally like one row, and you have to have diversity there.
One of the things we talk about in Paper Camp when we talk about sales weeks, mm-hmm. and working with sales reps is the importance of the conversation and the communication between your, because it's brands that attend Paper Camp. So talking with the brands about, like, have these conversations with your rep, include them in your sales process, what's happening elsewhere on other sales channels for wholesale. When you go to a show, make sure you're looping in the rep for a territory. If a shop comes in, if it's on Fair,
yes.
Talk to them about how you can handle that in a way that's respectful to both parties. And really not even just respectful, but like beneficial to both parties. Because some of the actions I'm seeing are a disadvantage to all, like, it's conflicting for some of these brands to have certain things happening on Fair the way they are, and also having sales reps going out and doing their job. And it doesn't put the sales reps in the best position to do the best job. As you mentioned earlier, the example of they may get an order through Fair that's $125, but you may have already established a relationship with the shop next door who's going to do multiple orders throughout the year for thousands of dollars. But that's like institutional knowledge that you have. And so, like, keeping those lines of communication open so that you can communicate those things to them and they can also communicate things back to you. It's a win-win for everyone.
I completely agree. And I think it's hard, you know, it's just, we're all kind of strapped for time and energy. And I think in the beginning of your business journey, you have, first, you might be, I just want to see if this works, but you also have a little bit more foresight and you're probably more proactive and like kind of setting up the landscape you want. And then as you're so busy shifting and changing and trying to like grow, that I think later on, or maybe you have staff that doesn't, I mean, maybe they understand your value structures, but they don't, they're so locked into what they're doing. They're not seeing the bigger picture. And I've always been a big believer in like, what do you really want? You know, especially when there's customer service issues, like what's the outcome you want? And so, and then there's sometimes like, it's just going to be really tough if I, you know, and I actually haven't seen it where like lines who just started out on fair and go to have reps, it's rare that doesn't work.
Yeah. It usually is a good complement to each other. Yeah. It's just about keeping the lines of communication open. Majority of the brands I work with who work with reps are also selling on fair. And I will add here that like, working with reps is not something that you can like systematize and automate like other aspects of your business, because you're dealing with other humans, you're dealing with different work styles, you're dealing with, you know, there are certain things, you're going to have your releases on the same time and you're going to make sure catalogs get out to the reps and all of that. But I guess what I'm trying, they should be. But what I'm trying to say is it's really important to understand the nuance of bringing sales reps onto your team and what that means. It's not, I find, and I'd be curious your perspective on this, but I see a lot of misconceptions with young brands in the industry who think, I want to offload my sales and I'm going to find a sales rep and they are going to handle everything with regards to sales. And that's just not the case. I mean, a sales rep will go out on your behalf, but like you're still managing the operations of that sales engine.
Totally. Yeah, I think you're right. It's sales rep are kind of more like a clearinghouse, right? Like, and it was so funny. I was just talking to one of our lines that's looking at fulfillment opportunities, like a third, not a 3PL.
A warehouse.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, well, the thing is, we're still going to do all this administrative work. We're just not going to be packing the carts, right? So I think, yes, of course, you're still going to have to do spreadsheets. You're still going to have to send emails. However, hopefully you're getting so much more in sales without so much of your time being spent in that, that it's beneficial, you know, and sales reps take commission, right? However, hopefully, again, it's being seen as something that it's worth it because
it's providing a service. It's providing a service that you're paying for, mm-hmm. just like you'd hire.
So, yeah, I think, again, like it is a lot harder to do the job, but I think everyone, it's funny, I'll talk to them like, well, my job's a lot harder now. And not my reps, but just somebody at a show. And I was like, everyone's job's harder now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in late stage capitalism. Like it's not going to get any easier. So I think it's figuring out how to work and do your job. And I tell my accounts, I'm like, if you literally write things down on a napkin or a piece of paper and snap a photo of it, I will get your order together. Like, I mean, we have a portal, but like, it's really, to me, it's like, I know I was always writing things down and it's interesting. You'll have a lot of lines that are like, oh, do we even need catalogs? Yes, you do.
Say it again for the people in the back.
Yes, you do. And don't wait 2.5-3 years to make a new one. Like you're discontinuing, and I can't send 8 PDFs to an account and be like, here, I made your job easier. So, and well done ones too. You know, I'm like, we have a line. I love it. They literally put together a very great, you know, they call it a line sheet. It's a catalog, but it is just stapled on top, has great photos, everything you need. I don't need a bound copy. You know, I repped Rifle for, you know, until they shifted to a national agency, and they do have this beautiful catalog, but you don't need that, but you do need good photos, all the information in one spot. And then line sheets specific to the seasons and whatnot. Those are really helpful because, you know, we are going to go meet with our accounts, but if our account's like, hey, can you just send me the holiday line sheet? Sure. And then we're on the phone together writing the order. It's funny how I like used to be like, oh, I don't want to have to call people. But now so many of my accounts, we, instead of emailing, we'll just be on the phone together. I stop in as much as I can too. And it's crazy. I just, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you sent me an email, but now that I've seen you, like, we need to write an order.
Sometimes it's as simple as being top of mind, right? Them seeing your face, them seeing your name pop up in email. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Totally. And so I just still think people make the world go round. They can be big pains in the ass and they can also be magical. And I fear that we are on a path where we're going to try and be automated. And I remember too, like as a business, I did some kind of, wasn't coaching, but I saw something about how you need to systematize your business. And I think there's some idea, maybe it's just me, but I've talked to other business owners now where I don't think it's completely wrong. I think we think in business that if we put all our processes in place, we have systems, that we'll be fine. We'll manage all this stuff. You know what? We can't, because it's still life. Like mm-hmm. things just happen. You're like, oh yeah, doesn't matter. It's still like, well, you can do all these things. And so it's more like, how can we be fluid and work together and communicate? So I'm like, when it comes to what's the future holds, I feel fortunate that I work with stationery and cards, because, you know, people, I talk to them like, people still send cards? And I was like, yeah, because it's a small way. And I also think, like, you know, I sold fabric, right? But we sold anywhere between $300 and $3,500 worth of cards a month. Because when you walk into a store and you connect with it, but maybe you don't connect with their like specific inventory, you get inspired because you just want to have something that connected you to that feeling.
Yeah.
And so I think cards are a way. And I, you know, I think Tamara may have said it first. She was like, cards sell where they are, meaning like whether the person's there or the cards, like once you've decided to go that route, they're going to move. If you don't tend to the garden, it will get sad, but they will sell, because in the end, you know, and people will be like, oh, the greeting cards. I was like, you, if you're walking in a Safeway and buying a $10 papyrus card, I think you can buy a card that was beautifully made by a letterpress, by a risograph, however, for $6. So, but yeah, I think the trend of it's going to be soft and then hopefully it won't be. And I think it's just figuring out how to focus on, maybe it's the 80-20 rule, whatever, but I'm hopeful that as more folks who start retail shops are in business and kind of see that, oh, having this trusted advisor here to help me along in my assortment planning could actually make it so, yeah, maybe there's more time spent with this person, but it's making my job easier because I'm selling more. I'm not buying all this extra stuff that I don't necessarily need.
Totally. I agree. So tell us what's coming up for Crow and Canary this summer. I think you're doing Shop Object again this summer?
Yes, we are back at Shop Object. Really excited. I don't have the full lineup of our lines. So we don't have all the lines in the booth. That one, you know, for it doesn't work for everyone. And two, there's just no way it would fit. I think back in the day when Crow and Canary and the stationery show, like the stationery show and the New York gift show were going at kind of full steam ahead, in our storage unit, we had flooring tiles for, I think, like four booths. But yeah, we've got, you know, Shop Object is this like smaller format. So we usually have the last three shows, we've had 14 of the lines in. This time, I'm like, I would love to have 14, but also 12 or 13 is great too. And that's, you know, a big haul, but it's so cool. Like we were talking earlier that, you know, the February show was slower, but it was amazing. We actually opened more new accounts. Like there were people who had either never been to the show before or new to the industry, and they ordered, you know, brands that have been around like 15 years. So, and hadn't seen them before. And that's the thing. There is a lot out there. But yeah. So we have Shop Object in August, and I'm actually bringing my son who will be almost 16. He's very excited to help. So we have, you know, three reps on the East Coast and they all come and help, but it's kind of nice to have that extra person on setup and takedown. And he is very excited. And so I'm like, I'm going to make sure you know how to take orders and whatnot. But yeah, so that show is, you know, typically you're going to see all the holiday. And I think it will be like one of our lines, just they've already released holiday and have a ton of new wrap and whatnot. And so I think it will be, I think even in my previous industry, I think trade shows are critical to how an industry performs and connects. And, you know, I always remember I'd be like, I'm probably not going to see anything I'm excited about. And every time I found something. And then I also would connect with people. Some of my dearest friends are shop, you know, former shop owners in my old industry. And so I think here it's like getting to see other lines, meet with people. And also, like, I love Shop Object because there are so many of those smaller format booths that really cool lines and, you know, otherwise like a bigger booth when it makes sense. And so you kind of have like, when I do have time to walk the rows, it's like, oh, that's really cool. And then you just hope that you can go buy samples at the end of the show.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, this has been wonderful. Tell people where they can find you online. I know we were talking about social, so you could drop that handle too if you want.
It's really booming page. But yeah, we're at Crow and Canary, just all spelled out on Instagram. And then our site is the same, crowandcanary.com. And then depending, we didn't really speak to like people pitching us, but always welcome pitches. And I definitely have more thoughts on that because we get emails, calls, samples sent a lot. And so the good news is that Paper Camp exists for folks to kind of figure that out as well.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, thank you again for your time today. This was awesome.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Kelly. I hope you found it helpful as well. As we learned in the recent State of the Product Industry survey, our industry is in a bit of a flux right now, which is why it is so important for us to hear from different people and perspectives in the industry. If you want to grow your wholesale revenue stream, I want to invite you to join the waitlist for our upcoming Paper Camp program. This is our intensive coaching program where we teach you everything you need to know to build strong wholesale foundations. We work with brand new businesses as well as people that have been wholesaling a while, but are in kind of a state of plateau and need a bump. We start first with your product line. We talk about release schedules and we go through your numbers to ensure that your products are profitable for wholesale. Then we move into sales tools that you have to have when you're selling wholesale so that you're making a strong first impression with buyers. And then we talk about marketing strategies and ways to reach various store owners. We also talk about who's a good fit for your products. Each week's teachings build on the previous week, and we host weekly live coaching calls to answer any and all of your questions. It's a really robust program, and you get a lot of hands-on support. We'll open the 44th round of Paper Camp soon, and we sell out every time. So head to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp to join that waitlist. Again, we've been running this program since 2011, and our alumni's products are carried in shops big and small all around the world. We would love to help you do the same if that's what you're working towards. So join the list at prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Thank you so much for listening to the end today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do share it with a friend. And I look forward to seeing you next week with a new episode. Have a good week.